Hello and welcome to Radio Edu Talk. This is David Noble in Dalgetty Bay, Fife in Scotland, and I'm delighted to welcome to the show today Yvonne Riley and Jodie Parsons, and we're going to be talking for the next 20 minutes or so on what makes an excellent mathematics classroom. So welcome to Edu Talk, Yvonne and Jodie.
Hello, welcome.
Okay, and obviously it's a long distance call today. Hopefully the line will stay clear enough, and hopefully our listeners will consider getting in touch. If you're listening to the live show, you can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, or you can pop something up on Twitter with the hashtag edutalk, and you can put your comments or questions to our guests Yvonne and Jodie. So without any further ado, Yvonne, we'll start with yourself. Could you just give us a kind of brief background to your career and your journey, I suppose, to an Australian classroom?
Yeah, sure. I graduated from Strathclyde Uni in Glasgow, and then became a research scientist, and I worked down in London for a few years. And then I did my teaching degree and worked in London probably for about 2 years there. And then my husband and I immigrated to Australia, I think, in 2006 with our three kids. And I became a casual relief teacher here, or like an emergency teacher. And in the UK, you know, I taught science, but I hadn't taught math before. And when you're in Australia, you actually have to teach two methods. So I had to teach math and science. And the first job I got was actually at Sunshine College. Excuse me. And I was a little bit scared because I was supposed to teach a maths class, and I'm a good mathematician, but I hadn't actually taught maths before, so I was on a very steep learning curve at that point. But Judy was actually working at Sunshine College by then, and that's where we met.
And what about yourself, Judy? What's your own background?
I've been teaching at the college for a little while before Yvonne came along, and wasn't actually satisfied in my practice as a classroom teacher. And once Yvonne came along, it gave us an opportunity. So she came in as a casual relief teacher, and then the school saw that she was a great teacher, so they employed her on an ongoing basis, which gave us sort of the freedom to trial and experiment and things. We were working next door to each other, and I was feeling dissatisfied with my classes, and as was she, and we just struck up a conversation about how inadequate we were as teachers compared to what we thought everybody else was doing in the school. And, you know, our professional relationship started from there, and we haven't looked back since.
Now, I'm sure that many listeners will, you know, be aware of aspects of your work, and you have an online presence, and there's ParsonsRiley.com website, and I'm sure we'll touch on it later. You know, you've been awarded a couple of prizes or awards recently, but I'll assume that listeners have got, you know, some background awareness and knowledge of your practice, and obviously we can tell straight away that you're still very much classroom practitioners. I wonder, was there a particular point then, and I know you work very physically close as well within the school, but was there a particular moment or moments that actually forced you to change your practice so dramatically and effectively?
I think at this school, I'm really sorry, this is the beginning of the day here in Australia, and I don't know if you can hear, but the kids are outside my office having a good old laugh and yelling and screaming, so I'm sorry, it's very noisy. We used to stream our classes, which is a really common practice in Australia, and it's pretty common in America and in the UK as well, where you'll have your maths classes are your top set, your middle set, and your bottom set, or maybe you might even have like a numeracy class as well. And we did have that situation here. And what happened is, and it's classic, because I was the newest and least experienced teacher, you end up with the worst class. So you get the classes, the kids are at the lowest stream, which is a really difficult class to teach. I'm sorry, Jodie's trying to get the attention of these kids to make them be a bit quieter, but they're too busy. They're diving about and having a laugh, so it's not working so well. So I was really struggling in that classroom. And Jodie, because she'd been at the school for a couple of years, she actually had the top stream, the top set in that year level. And I would look through, we had two glass doors that used to adjoin our classroom. I'd be looking through, watching her. Basically, just it looked like she was swanning about, doing almost nothing. These kids were, you know, head down, bums up, powering through their math textbook. And I was fighting fires in my room with the kids that, you know, just, we were using the same textbook, the same, you know, year level textbook, but just wasn't enough. So I had, I had the luxury of being a slightly older teacher. So I was about 39 at the time, and so I had no qualms about who I am and my capabilities. I was quite happy to say to Jodie, when you've got nothing to do in this classroom, do you mind just popping through here and help me out with this table here? And I set up my worst table closest to her room, so that she could just pop in and help me teach in that classroom. And it was from then that we just started having conversations about what was happening in her room, what was happening in my room, and what wasn't working across the board. And it was basically just the start of the conversation that got things happening.
And I'm aware that we're very tight for time, and you've got such a busy day ahead of you. So, I mean, just take us right to the point then. What are the kind of key features of the maths programme and the approaches within Sunshine College? I mean, from my kind of prior reading, you know, it's not necessarily rocket science. It's, you know, zone of proximal development, great differentiation, effective questioning. But can you just kind of capture, you know, exactly what you're doing so brilliantly and has these wonderful outcomes?
I think what we do so well is we've gone back to basics, as you said. We're making sure that we identify what the students don't know and teach that. And so that might mean going back 3 or 4 years in their learning progress and addressing any deficits that they've developed then or any misconceptions that they've developed then. But also for students who are further along their learning journey, making sure we're able to identify that and fill in those gaps. So often, you know, classroom teachers and schools get caught up thinking these children are in grade 7, we'll just teach them what they need to know in grade 7 without actually finding out what the students already know. I mean, sometimes we might have a little bit of a brainstorm or in some classes have a conversation about what the students know or a pre-test, but it's that teacher's lack of ability to really dive deep into what the students already know and find out where their misconceptions are or find out what the very next step in their learning is. And we pride ourselves on being able to do that very well at Sunshine College. Our teachers are great practitioners in that respect, that they know that learning journey all the way from around about a grade 2 learner all the way up to about a grade 12 learner. So, you know, teachers are very well versed on that and are able to identify where students sit on that continuum of learning and take them to that next step. Taking them to the next step is easy when you know what that next step is. I think as well, like when we decided to put all the students in together, we did have about a battle in our hands with the other teachers who would say, oh, the kids are in year 9, they have to be doing Pythagoras. Well, if they can't tell you what the internal angles in a triangle add up to, how can they possibly do things like Pythagoras? If they don't even know that there's 3 angles inside a triangle, why are we doing sine, tan and cosine ratios? So we were not afraid to just ditch whatever the curriculum was supposed to be for students of that age and address the curriculum that the students actually needed at that age. Then we made sure all of the students were in the class from the whole range of levels so that you had your very best mathematicians modelling all the great practices that they bring to the class to the students that maybe aren't your most able students who don't understand what being a good student is. And that made all the difference in the world. It made all the difference to the lower students who got to see what being a mathematician is and sent them the message that we believed them to be good mathematicians and that they could get better. And I think a large component of what we do as well is we offer students choice so they are active participants in their learning. So they're fully aware of where they are on their journey of learning and what their next step is, and we help them to make the right decisions about that. So in our differentiated classrooms, we offer up a minimum of 3 levels or 3 activities in that classroom, and students are able to choose a task which is most appropriate for their learning, so a task that's just right for them. They then work with another 1 or 2 peers who work at the same speed as them but are also at the same level as them so that they've got that cooperative learning happening but at a level that's appropriate for them. that enables us as teachers to walk around and teach at the point of need to small groups of students who need it when they need it. Things that you probably guess by now, Judy and I can actually talk underwater, so you're happy to just keep on talking and fill up your full 20 minutes for you. But I was just going to say, the other thing that we do, which is quite different, and it's you can find it on the internet, and it's a fantastic strategy for helping students decode worded problems, is their reciprocal teaching and mathematics strategy. And that's just a fantastic way of helping students work together, work collaboratively to decode, to understand what the worded question is asking them to do. And so it's not about teaching them academic vocabulary, which I think some math teachers make the mistake of doing, worrying about perimeter and you know, circumference. The real students who don't understand what a cupboard is because the language is not English, the first language is not English, and so they haven't come across cupboard before, and it completely stops them from answering the maths question where the maths is actually doable for them. And it's a literacy strategy, but we've employed it really successfully in the maths classroom, and it's a really simple strategy for teachers to adopt in a classroom. Even if they find it hard to do any of the other parts of the programme that we do, that's a really simple one. And sorry to interrupt there. If I could just go back to when we talked about the beginning, and Yvonne was saying in my classroom that the kids were, you know, quiet and they were doing their work, and she felt that that wasn't happening in her classroom. The reality is that the students weren't learning in my classroom either. They were just more compliant students, or students who'd learned the skills to look like they were good learners. And that was sort of really where a lot of our learning came from, because we had to be honest about how much learning was happening in our classroom. From an external view, it looked like a lot of learning was happening in our classroom, or in my classroom. As the classroom teacher, I knew that wasn't the case, and I wasn't just satisfied with students sitting there individually working, or working in, you know, little pairs and churning through work, and I knew that that wasn't the best way to do it. So when we came together, we decided to devise a way which was suitable for all students, not just the compliant students, or not just the students who'd been streamed into the top end, or we weren't looking at a numeracy program for the students who were dysfunctional in maths. We wanted something that would work for everybody.
I should say at this point that you've kindly shared some kind of key links which tie in with what you've talked about in the last couple of minutes. And if listeners go to twitter.com/edutalker, then you'll be able to access those links, and they'll also be under the media player once the podcast goes up on the website. I'm interested a little bit more in what actually goes on in your classrooms. And I think reading some of the literature, context is key in making it, kind of problem solving and giving them scenarios and situations that they're going to be familiar with in their young lives. And I'd also be interested to hear from yourself, Jodie, about whether textbooks are entirely kind of cast out of the window, or whether there's still a role.
Do you want to? Jodie was. She's struggling a little tiny bit with your accent, even though she listens to me being daily, and she thinks she's got the Scottish accent off pat. So that's why there's a little pause there. I'll start the answer, but then Jodie will get for the question once she jumps in. The problem is, Jodie and I actually worked for a textbook company for a little while. They employed us to try and differentiate the textbook, which is actually ludicrous. The problem with textbooks is that everything they offer is a procedural opportunity to tackle the maths. Understanding procedures is only really good for people like us who quite like and understand and can memorise maths procedures, and we make sense of them for ourselves. 80% of the population cannot just memorise mathematical procedures. So the only way to get them to be able to understand and operate mathematically is to help them understand the concepts. You don't get the concepts in the books. All of the procedures are, you know, even the simplest procedure like the area of a circle, say pi r squared, even if it was offered as r squared times pi, that matches the concept much more than pi r squared. Now, as mathematicians, we know that the outcome is the same. But if you get confused because the procedure doesn't match the concept, then why not just offer the procedure that matches the concept? So we found that the textbooks just don't cut the mustard. We do have some year
7, 8, 9 and 10 textbooks in our maths class. And what we do is when we're problem solving, if the students happen to have gone through a whole batch of problems at a particular level, so I've got a year 8 student, they've gone through all the problems, but they actually operate about grade 10 level, then they can go and get the grade 10 textbook and they're instructed to look for the worded questions in the grade 10 textbook because some of them are all right. But apart from that, the only opportunity textbooks offer you is to practice procedures, and that's it.
And just to add to that, all of the in our classrooms, people are very surprised when they come in because we could have around about 50 students in the one classroom. And there is some noise, but it's not at all loud noise, and it's certainly not disruptive noise. But a lot of the noise is mathematical noise or conversations that are happening around the maths. And a lot of times there is some arguing happening between the students, and that's a really pleasing thing to see. So it's not a conventional-looking classroom if you were to come in. There is no teacher desk at the front of the room. There are whiteboards sort of around the room so that the teachers can move around and teach in any area or any space that they need to be. But there certainly isn't a traditional setup. As I said, there's no teacher desk. There's no teacher chair. Teachers don't sit down, work even distributed in a normal fashion.
In fact, you should talk about teaching from the front of the class because that's probably the thing that people will most find hard to imagine.
So when we do introduce a task or introduce our classrooms, is what we try to do is minimise the amount of time that the teacher takes up the front of the class to introduce the task. There's no point am I giving the students examples of the type of work that they will do that day. We're not putting written examples on the board that the students are copying down. We introduce the task and then introduce the three levels that the students can choose from, and then they just move from there. So the idea is that we'd like to have that happening within 2 to 3 minutes so that student learning happens straight away. Then as teachers or skilled practitioners, we're able to walk around and help the students at their point of need. If you've got 50 students in a classroom, there could be 10 different questions that need to be answered, and it's much better answering those, you know, one group, one question, or two questions per group, rather than addressing the whole class for 15 minutes about what potential problems they might have and also what ideas they might need to solve the problems.
Because you've only got 5 kids that are actually listening to you when you're talking in a class, and teachers know that. Teachers and we'll repeat it again to try and encourage more people to hear what we're saying, but it doesn't work. Fewer and fewer kids listen to what you're saying the more you say it. So you've only got the really compliant and really able students fully actively listening to what you're saying from the front of the class. So why do we do it?
But, you know, teaching in our classrooms is the most enjoyable thing of the day. And other teachers who we team teach with, you know, they'd say the same thing. Walking into a maths class is not a struggle for us at Sunshine College. It's actually a joy to be in the classroom. Kids love it. They love being there. We had some students the other day who came along, some Year 8 girls, and wanted to join the Year 7 class. And
because they had PE.
Yeah, they didn't want to go to PE that day. So these are the types of things that happen in our class on a daily basis. If the teacher's out on a yard duty, the students will say, oh, what are we doing after lunch today, miss? And they're referring to a maths class. Now, 5, 6, 7 years ago, that may not have happened, but it's certainly something that happens all the time now. So it's a joy for the teachers, but it's also a joy for the students.
Now, I'm aware that you both work together to provide the ongoing support to colleagues. I think there was a video I watched recently where you were talking about supporting teachers in the Shetland Islands and in Scotland. I wonder if would one of the forms of support be to actually share the specific maths programme that you have at Sunshine College, or really does it have to go far deeper than that? Is it about professional capacities and competencies and sort of quite, you know, deep kind of professional learning?
Yes, exactly what it is. The things that we've developed and written, the actual tasks in the wrong hands are as rubbish as a textbook is in the wrong hands. You know, so it's... You need to bring some skill and delivery and understand that you have to be asking really deep questions and questioning students all the time to drive the learning. And that can be done really well with some people, but other people need a lot of support and a lot of help in changing the practice from telling the students everything and giving them all the information without it being solicited to asking questions to probe to find where the student actually is, and then ask further questions to take them to the next level.
In fact, that is definitely the thing that people struggle with most. They're able to eventually come around to designing lessons which, you know, support student learning, that conceptual development as opposed to procedural work. But the thing they do struggle with the most is that pedagogy, or how to, their own philosophy of teaching, about moving away from telling the students something and allowing the students to learn something on their own. Although we as educators, we know that that's a much better option for the students. It's a much more pleasing option to teach a student or to guide a student towards their own discovery. However, that is something that teachers struggle with a lot, because some teachers like to think that a student can't learn something unless they've actually told them in the exact way.
We're just coming to the last couple of minutes of today's show, so I just want to squeeze a couple more questions in. I wonder for both of you, in what ways are your approaches developing or changing? Because I'm sure you have your own sort of professional development avenues that you're working along. So, you know, can you give us an example of how your approaches have maybe been refined or developed recently? And I wonder who, without being a mathematician myself, but who out there continues to influence your practices?
It's a good question. You might not like the answer. What we've found is that Yvonne and I are pretty quick learners, and we move at a pretty rapid pace. So, you know, we've been influenced by people over the years, but we found that often it's like them, you know, whatever they do, you're going to decide not to do that. Can influence the practice. Or some people, a guy, Rob Dinkahoots, has been a really good influence on us about, and he was a primary school educator, and he, you know, talked about never letting a learning opportunity go, and that's sort of something that has resonated with us for quite a while. But we find now that a lot of our learning has come from our own experiences, and we're still very fortunate to be in the classroom a great majority of our time. And just working closely together and working with other teachers and working in different settings and trying different things has really been the greatest influence, or has really helped us to develop our teaching abilities.
We're actually presenting tomorrow and Friday, at the Maths Association Victoria Conference. And the paper that we've submitted for that is called The Hierarchy of Reflective Practices. And it's about how teachers read the data that's available to them in the classroom. And I think when Julie talks about us being quick learners, is we actually read the data that the students give us very similarly and very quickly. And it's really helped us to hone our skills. We both are currently doing PhDs, and our PhD supervisor, mine is Peter Sullivan, who wrote the Australian curriculum, and Julie's is Colleen Vale, and she's written lots of texts on maths education. And they both have influenced our thinking. But it's honestly been probably, and this might seem a bit, you know, insane, but it's honestly been us working together and learning together and thinking at the same speed, exactly what you would want for your students, that's most influenced us. We're really open to learning. We're very honest with each other. We can take it when something is really poor, you know, and we've done something that's rubbish. We can take it because we know it, and we're happy to talk about it. And that has honestly been the thing that has driven our learning the most. If someone doesn't have the luck to be working with someone like that, then you almost need to go fishing and find a researcher or an educator who's thinking you can align with and use what they do to influence your practices. But we were just really lucky that we found it, you know, working back to back.
That's fascinating. And I'm going to try and squeeze in one final question. Obviously, well, you'd assume that your local community would maybe have the same issues or, you know, difficult histories of mathematic education, you know, with parents and grandparents.
Yeah.
So I just wonder very briefly how you go about taking the local community with you.
So initially, when we removed the textbooks, our college principal was concerned, as were a number of other teachers, about a community perception. When you've got schools in the area who use textbooks and who also pump their students full of homework every night, there is that community perception that more work equals more learning or greater excellence in that area. However, our data suggests otherwise. But we needed for people to take a chance on us or gamble on that as such to begin with in order to get some data that was, you know, a longitudinal study of data. Our parents now are extremely supportive of our mathematics program, and that was because we were able to sit down and talk with the parents and have individual meetings if that's what it needed, and like parent nights, parent information evenings, and explain to student parents, we know exactly where your child is, and give them a really good individualised understanding and talk about how our only goal is to make sure that their child improves. Our goal isn't about improving, obviously it's improving everybody in the classroom, but we're not talking about taking the top five students out of the classroom and moving them along. We're talking about making sure everybody experiences some success. And once you have that conversation with parents, I mean, parents all around the world want the best for their children. That's why they send their kids to school. They want, you know, better opportunities for them, or, you know, a greater chance at education, and particularly, you know, many parents haven't had great experiences themselves in maths class, and they remember how terrible it was to sit there with a textbook and try and learn from that. So once they start seeing what their children are doing in our classrooms, or even opportunities to experience that themselves, they certainly see that that's better for their learning. And we actually run a program each year for our the leadership team in our school, so our principals and our assistant principals, and get them to do the work as well that we offer up to our students. Yeah. Just to make sure they see how rigorous the program is, and how, you know, how difficult a maths program it is, and how much more complex, or how hard.
Some people believe it's an intervention program, and it's really only to save the kids at the bottom end, and the kids at the top end are fine just churning through textbook rubbish. It's not an intervention program. This is an approach to teaching mathematics that includes everyone and ensures every single student gets better. And that doesn't matter whether you're currently operating below an expected level or way above the expected level. You can do it better and in a different way by getting really involved in the maths and really tussling with the concepts of maths and not just memorising procedures.
Now, just before we go, we'll mention that you've, as I said near the top of the show, that you've the two of you have recently received a couple of awards. I'm smiling to myself here because from one Scot to another, we don't usually talk ourselves up. But you know, many congratulations, many congratulations on these awards. Do you want to just mention the titles and I suppose what it was recognition for?
At the beginning of the year, I actually won Educator of the Year at an Australia Day Award for this local community, Brimbank, and that was really nice. But the icing on the cake was, so the state of Victoria that Melbourne's in, Victoria, and Victoria have Educational Excellence Awards every year, and there are about eight categories that you can win, and only three of them are team awards. And we actually won the maths team won the Outstanding School Advancement Award, which comes with a prize of about $25,000 for the school, which is fantastic. And then all of the winners are then eligible to win this really prestigious award called the Lindsay Thompson Award. Lindsay Thompson was the longest serving education minister in the state of Victoria. And we happened to win that as well. And it's absolutely fantastic recognition for the amount of work that's gone on to get this program to the place it's in today. And it's included supporting, we now support around 80 schools. We support universities to deliver their curriculum for the pre-service teachers, as well as just actually, you know, teaching our own kids, which is, you know, 25 periods of the week. So both awards, we won about $45,000, which goes towards professional development of the maths teaching staff, and we're also using it to help professionally develop other staff as well to share some resources. But it's the highest honour you can get in education for us in our department, and we were just utterly thrilled to have won it, really thrilled.
Well, many congratulations again, and listen, we'll leave it there. I appreciate as a fellow classroom teacher just how important the early moments of a school day are. So I'll just remind listeners, you've been listening to Yvonne Riley and Jodie Parsons, and one of the places you might like to go to find out more information is parsonsriley.com. So over the last half hour or so, we've been talking about what makes an excellent mathematics classroom, and as I say, if you've got any comments or questions for for Jodie and Yvonne, after you listen to the podcast, then you can contact them directly, no doubt, through their website or through edutalk.cc. So best wishes. I know the holidays are just upon you, and I hope you manage to get some downtime and maybe take your eye off the PhD for a while. I think that's always important. But
that's the only time. Can do it.
So best wishes to you both, and we'll hopefully have you back on the show in the months and years to come. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.